Yesterday was the first Labor Day in Michigan since right-to-work legislation was signed into law. Joining us now to talk about organized labor, especially post-right-to-work, is John Beck. He's the Associate Director of the School of Human Resources and Labor Relations at Michigan State University. Welcome, John.
Great, thanks. Nice to be here.
About half of the United States now are right-to-work states, mostly in the South and out West, and we keep hearing that data is either hard to come by or not conclusive or both. What in your best opinion, what's your best thinking here as to the result of right-to-work legislation in other states?
Well, I guess that, first of all, you have to remember that many of those have been right-to-work states since the late 1940s when right-to-work was first allowed under labor law. Maybe a little bit of clarification just for your listeners. The way right-to-work came into being is in 1947 under Taft-Hartley, which was the first set of amendments to the National Labor Relations Act, which was passed in 1935, the Wagner Act. It was allowed for the first time for there to be state-by-state option on allowing what was called right-to-work, where members of labor unions could give up their membership and still be covered by a union contract in mostly private sector employment, because at that time, the 1947 Act, just like the 1935 Act, only extended to private sector workers. So in that way, it allowed members to not be members but still get everything that a member received in the same workplace. So often that's why unions have called it the right to work for less, or, you know, it's a modification of this whole notion of a union shop where you've got 100% of people covered and 100% of people paying dues to be members of the union. So many of the states that were early right-to-work states already were anti-labor states at the time of the passage in 1947. South Carolina, which, you know, has only single-digit unionization compared to here in Michigan, where we're even now, later in the early part of the 21st century, in double-digit unionization rates compared to other states. So it's a real toss-up, you know, once you start talking about it, because the fact that so much is different from place to place, history of the specific states, the range of industries, public sector employment, whether or not public sector unionization is allowed under state law. There's a lot of kind of nuances to all of that.
Is this unresolved quality here about the impact of right to work? Is that going to linger for a long time?
Well, here in Michigan especially it is, for a number of reasons. First thing to keep in mind about the passage of right to work here in Michigan is that right to work by its very nature is really staggered into existence based on when contracts become open. When a contract is, if people are currently under contract, they are still covered under the old contractual provisions of, say, mandatory union membership in a union shop until the new contract is open and is being bargained. At that time, it's illegal to demand a union shop here in Michigan, as normally would have been the case prior to right to work. So some of those contracts don't come due for years to come now. And there was a spate of quick reopeners and renegotiation of contracts to lock in right to work union shop kind of language for years to come, in some cases, you know, 4 or 5, perhaps even longer years, depending on the specific workplace and specific contract. So in that way, the actual effect of the law will not be felt in Michigan for some time for a number of different employees in the state.
Well, what does the union community in general think about this trend? We became, I believe, the 24th state in the country to enact right to work. Does the union community in general feel that this is a trend that's going to continue? Are there battle line states here?
Well, naturally, there are other states that have reputations now as being fairly contested states. The one that comes to mind is the state of Wisconsin, which under Governor Walker had a number of anti-labor bills that were passed and signed into law there. So I think that people might look for Wisconsin or others, but there, it's not like there is this continuing trend. Every few years, one comes up. Indiana was the one, I believe, right before us. So I think that the way to think about organized labor's response to right to work, first is to look at the actual basis of the legislation. So here in Michigan, often people talked about it as somehow that this was going to enhance productivity or make it kind of a destination state for economic development if it was passed. I think that that kind of notion is normally regarded by members of organized labor as kind of a slap because of the fact that there is no consonance between that economic development goes only to those, for example, right-to-work states. Some of the richest states in the nation, California, New York, and others, are still vibrant union security states compared to right-to-work states like South Carolina or Alabama, Mississippi, and the rest. So that the notion that somehow the floodgates of economic development were going to open, I think that organized labor found that to be kind of a sham here in the state as an argument for right-to-work. Right-to-work is by its very nature simply a union-weakening piece of legislation. So in that way, if you think that to get economic development you must have really weak unions in the state, then it might make sense. But in reality, unions can actually be a strong engine of productivity, a strong engine of kind of a good economy. And so the idea that somehow what we really need is weak unions, and this will translate suddenly into Michigan bouncing back dramatically in relation to economic development, I think a lot of people just were quite put off by that whole notion.
I've seen reports, and others have as well, I'm sure you have as well, reports of a greater number of jobs, but most of those jobs not comparable in terms of salary.
Right.
Is that still one of the larger forces that's in play here?
Well, and see, the problem is it's hard to come up with general causality about how this specific provision links to other things. You know, in reality, we've seen a general downsizing of, for example, the overall wage here in Michigan. Even with levels of unionization still being high, real wages that people are getting have fallen dramatically since 1982. The rise of more and more service sector jobs that are not necessarily as well paid as the original manufacturing base that we had here in Michigan. So trying to somehow draw a direct line correlation, you know, that right to work equals this, or, you know, that there's a linear progression in terms of how either what brings it on or what comes out of it is another question. All we do know, I think the thing that you can, you know, take to the bank is by its very nature, it's meant to be a union weakening provision. And part of that union weakening was not only about the unions being weakened in relation to the workplace, but unions being weakened in relation to political might when it comes to putting money in through PACs into candidates here in the state of Michigan. And I think especially this was meant to be a direct slap at the Michigan Education Association, the federal, state, county, municipal employees union, and other public sector workers, because they were regarded as extremely strong here in Michigan by comparison.
John Beck is the Associate Director of the School of Human Resources and Labor Relations at Michigan State University. John, thanks very much.